Today on Annenberg Radio News.
No, because he's the first black president of the United States, not the first black president of the urban United States.
Hear how one comedy on race is changing the TV landscape. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Wednesday, October 29th. I'm Carrie Poppy. Workers at a hotel near LAX staged a one-day strike today. Reporter Andy Vasoyan reports from the Westin Hotel.
Hotel maids and other workers held signs with pictures of bedbugs and chanted unity as they protested outside the LAX Westin Hotel. The catalyst for the strike was disciplinary action taken against a longtime employee. She was given a warning because she did not find bedbugs in one of the rooms she was cleaning. Antonia Cruz is a housekeeper at the Westin, where she has been working for 18 months. She and the other workers claim that hotel management is overworking them. As a result, she says they're not able to provide proper room care.
Sometimes the rooms are so messy, so dusty, so dirty, and the time that they're giving us to clean the rooms is not enough for us to check everything. I mean, we are in charge to clean the rooms, not to prevent the bed bugs.
She says that staff don't always know how to figure out if there are bed bugs in the first place.
Some of them, they know the animals, the bed bugs. But some of them know. They don't know. So that's one of the questions that I'm always saying. I mean, how do we know?
California Hotel and Lodging Association says that bedbugs have been making a resurgence since the 90s, but are not associated with any known diseases and are just a pest. The workers are represented by Unite Here, which is currently in contract negotiations with Westin. A representative for Westin Hotels sent an email statement that did not address the disciplinary action, but said management is working to minimize any disruption to hotel guests. Andy Vasoyan, Annenberg Radio News.
A proposal to raise the minimum wage $2 an hour in Los Angeles is getting a review. Yesterday, the LA City Council voted to commission a study on the impact of increasing the hourly rate. That decision sent labor activists to City Hall today over concerns that low-wage workers aren't getting what they're owed, no matter how much they make. Kelly O'Mara reports on what is known as wage theft.
Fake tombstones outside City Hall this morning weren't part of a Halloween display. The names of Los Angeles workers painted across the gravestones represent those who are dying to get paid what they say they're owed. The Los Angeles Coalition Against Wage Theft hoped the conversation about minimum wage would include how to enforce these labor laws.
Los Angeles is the wage theft capital of the U.S.
That's Zumi Mizukami of the Restaurant Opportunity Center Los Angeles. He says many workers never earn the amount it says they do on paper, whatever that may be. The high number of low-wage jobs here, in restaurants, construction, and small businesses, like car washes, contribute to this problem. A study done by the UCLA Downtown Labor Center found that low-wage workers lose $26.2 million every week in wage theft, the highest, they say, of any major city in the country.
In every restaurant that I've ever worked in the past 10 years, I've experienced wage theft on some level. I just didn't know that there was a term for it.
In June, the city council instructed the city attorney to look into ways to prosecute these scofflaw employers. But advocates say the enforcement isn't happening fast enough. And now the city plans to postpone wage theft enforcement until after they deal with the minimum wage question. Eric Huerta of Strategic Concepts and Policy in Education says wage theft covers all manner of sins.
Sometimes I would get shortchanged for my hours without even knowing it. Your employer doesn't pay your full wages in terms of like what you worked. They'll take your tips. I know for car wash workers in the car wash industry, because I work with a clean car wash campaign, they do something where they have workers come in maybe an hour or two early, and then they won't put them to work, so they just have them sitting around the car wash for a couple of hours without paying them that time to be there.
Statewide, there have been a number of recent cases against employers for violating overtime and minimum wage laws. And workers who feel they have been the victim of wage theft can file a claim with the state labor commissioner's office. Last week, California Comptroller John Chang also started a new effort to get money from violators who owe employees. But the coalition groups say LA needs a local enforcement body like San Francisco has. Without it, even workers who win judgments against their employers often never see a dime. Rosemarie Molina from the Clean Car Wash campaign says that only 17% of workers who win their claims for wage theft ever get any of the money.
We have workers who have wage claims from just for 2 years for over $100,000.
Business owners argue they're doing more than ever to comply with labor and wage laws. The number of lawsuits filed against large companies for violations has been on the rise recently, and part of what sent the minimum wage proposal back to the drawing board in the first place is the concern that the effort could hurt businesses and ultimately workers. Tina Kuntz, a researcher with the UCLA Downtown Labor Center, thinks the problem is that many small businesses don't even plan minimum wage or living wages into their budgets.
If we think that suddenly employers that are not paying today's minimum wage will be paying $13.25 or $15.25, it's ludicrous.
If the wage theft enforcement plans haven't progressed, Kuntz and the others say they'll be back in November with another rally. They'll still be making their one big demand: show me the money. Kelly O'Mara, Annenberg Radio News.
Minimum wage is still a major concern for Angelenos. The minimum wage was raised from $8 to $9 for fast food workers this past July. But as Camille Rockiestas reports, the pay raise hurts more than it helps.
It is 6 in the morning, and April Gomez stands at a cash register, serving customers at Noah's Bagels. The store is packed with hungry customers, and Gomez has 7 more hours left at the bagel shop. Then she will move on to her next job, a 6-hour shift at Wow Bento Sushi. Gomez is a 19-year-old business student at Moore Park College who has to support herself with 2 jobs, along with attending school full-time. She's now making $9 an hour, but she's not making more money.
I was getting paid $8.25 before, but even with that, I actually had more hours. So I would get like 36 hours in the week with $8.25.
Gomez says the decrease in hours plus taxes taken out of her paycheck is not even enough to pay for her books. Gomez says it's not just the workers who are losing money, but consumers are also feeling it in their wallets.
I feel really weird when I have to tell people like, oh, I have to charge you 50 cents for like less than an ounce of jelly.
There are nearly 200,000 fast food workers in Los Angeles, and an average adult with one child has to make at least $24 in order to afford necessities. James Cerizo is a financial advisor at Northwestern Mutual, and he says the raise in menu item prices doesn't entirely make up for the increased pay rates, because the cost of living has gone up tremendously within the past few years.
The cost of living is going up by X percent, and the minimum wage is also going up by X percent. But the important thing here is the minimum wage is not increasing at the same rate as the cost of living. So if you are making minimum wage, you're not making enough for you to run your life as a simple middle class person.
Cerizo says consumers buy less to save money, but this does not help the economy.
The economy does well when people buy things or buy services. Right now, people don't want to buy things or buy services. They want to save their money. And by doing that, they help themselves, but they don't help the economy. Thus, going back to minimum wage being raised, but not enough to run their lives based on the price index raising even higher.
However, Gomez says her cost of living is not outrageously high. The amount she's paid is just low. She compares doing 6.5 minutes of her responsibilities at work to a snack-sized McFlurry at McDonald's, which is $1.69.
I'm about to go to Mickey D's right now and get myself a McFlurry. Now that is about 6.5 minutes worth of my time. So that means in 6.5 minutes, I was able to take orders, replace the coffee, make a damn sandwich, take people's money, clean the damn bathroom in 6 minutes, and that is all equivalent to 1 McFlurry.
Gomez also says the task expected of her at Noah's is more than what they pay her. Mayor Eric Garcetti is proposing to raise minimum wage to $13.25 by 2017 in order to help people like April Gomez support themselves. Camille Riquiestas, Annenberg Radio News.
Will that be from here to go?
John Morris is running for assessor, and he plans to act right away on some very important issues, but he plans on being more cautious on others. Political podcaster Max Schwartz spoke with Morris.
This week on The Hot Seat, I interviewed the other candidate running for Los Angeles County tax assessor, John Morris. He's currently a head deputy district attorney, but he says he has a real estate background. Morris says he would be quick to act on the subject of corruption. He says he put a rule into place that would force the assessor to forfeit salary and benefits if he or she is unable to serve due to pending criminal charges. However, Morris might find it hard to act quickly on closing Proposition 13's loopholes. He says he'd have to take time to carefully consider anything that would result in raising taxes.
If it involves increasing taxes on the homeowners or businesses, we got to really look closely at that because the cost of living here in Los Angeles is much the highest in the nation. If we're going to start increasing taxes, that means we're going to make things even more expensive for the people living here.
But Morris says he plans to educate the people on Prop 13 in the assessor's office. You can listen to my podcast on AnnenbergRadio.org. Max Schwartz, Annenberg Radio News.
Actor Anthony Quinn starred in movies such as Zorba the Greek and Lawrence of Arabia. He appeared in more than 200 films before his death in 2001. As Katie Chen reports, a mural of the actor is getting a facelift.
A 30-year-old mural depicting prolific Latino actor Anthony Quinn will be restored in downtown as a part of the LA's Bringing Back Broadway program. The mural named The Pope of Broadway will begin its restoration process in early 2015. Conservators are working closely with the artist Eloy Torres to maintain the integrity of the mural and the reverence of Anthony Quinn's legacy. Artist Will Harone will be working on the restoration as he also wants to preserve what Quinn has done for the Latino community.
It's a very iconic image of Anthony Quinn. I think that he, among other actors, developed, some sort of symbolic position in the community because of his ethnic background.
In addition, Councilman Jose Huizar has secured a donation of $150,000 to revamp the mural. Other revitalization projects include the reboot of Grand Central Market and about another dozen historical buildings along Broadway. The Mural Conservancy of Los Angeles is also restoring the 1984 Olympic Arts murals along the 101 freeway. The Conservancy hopes to complete the restoration of the Pope of Broadway by 2016. Katie Chen, Annenberg Radio News.
Let's go. If you could gaze into the future.
So now on to the weather. Tomorrow we'll hit a high of 81 and a low of 63. And Friday you can expect possible showers. Yes, showers in Los Angeles. Don't be scared when water's falling from the sky. It's okay, Angelinos. Later on Annenberg Radio News, move over Silicon Valley. Hear about a local conference that gives thousands of dollars to new inventors and entrepreneurs with million-dollar ideas. Dia de los Muertos begins on Saturday. It's a day for celebration, festive costumes, and painted faces. But as Phoenix So reports, it's an emotional holiday for people who have lost loved ones.
Downtown LA's Olvera Street is home to the city's oldest celebration of Dia de los Muertos. Day of the Dead is a 9-day Mexican celebration that brings people closer to their dearly departed ancestors. For many Mexican Americans, Dia de los Muertos is intensely meaningful. They set up altars with marigolds, painted skulls, and food to honor the dead. Mike Mariscal is the organization of Olvera Street's Day of the Dead procession.
Part of the tradition and the ceremony is that the family being honored, and then at the end of the ceremony, about 40, 50, could be up to 100 people come and give you a hug. You're the guy, you're the special person that night.
Nearby at downtown's Grand Park, artists and activists were setting their own altars, bringing attention to causes such as police brutality, homelessness, and fighting violence. Tanisha Denard is with the Youth Justice Coalition. Her altar is deeply personal.
I have a couple of friends on this altar. I have Lenar Baker, I have Chris Carter, I have Anna, I have Ezell on here. So, a lot of these people are close to me. And I just feel like if we had things like youth centers, they would have had things to do instead of, being out of the streets.
Other altars are dedicated to people who are missing in Mexico. Elisa Mejia's altar memorializes the 43 Mexican student teachers who have been missing for a month. She also noticed her niece's photo on another altar, dedicated to missing women of the city of Juarez.
And I actually saw her picture there. I don't know who did that altar, but somebody who did some research, because there's so many women who have been murdered and disappeared in Chihuahua. But these altars celebrate life and beauty, but they also celebrate, they also bring light to a lot of darkness in our world and in our society.
For many Americans, Day of the Dead is an excuse to paint their faces, get drunk, and otherwise prolong Halloween. Yet to these Angelinos, the holiday takes on a personal meaning that they generously share with the public at large. Phoenix So, Annenberg Radio News.
Today, the University of Southern California is hosting its third annual Silicon Beach Conference, a place for inventors and entrepreneurs to showcase their talents to leaders in business, academia, Hollywood, and more. Impress the experts, and you might win big money. Earlier today, I spoke with Jay Tucker, founder of the event.
So Silicon Beach at USC, this is the third time we're doing it. It's a combination of two things. We'll be doing a $50,000 venture competition today. We'll be hosting the finals. Five teams are competing for up to $25,000 in prizes. And it's a conference where we focus on all of the things every entrepreneur needs to know, the merging of technology and entertainment, the future of tech, the future of the Silicon Beach movement, as well as a whole bunch of other topics near and dear to our hearts. We'll also make sure that we showcase all the great things that USC is doing to promote entrepreneurship.
So are most of the people who entered the competition students?
It's an interesting question. So we had almost 100 submissions this year. What we do in terms of the applications is each team has to have at least one current USC student, recent alum, so 5 years or less, or faculty member or staff member. I actually work for the Institute for Communication Technology Management. It's one of the centers of excellence at the Marshall School of Business. It's been around since 1985. And we focus on this intersection of technology, the communication sector, and digital content. And so for us, as we look at what's next, what's coming next, looking forward, we're able to lean on our sister organization, the Lloyd Greif Center for Entrepreneurial Studies, as well as some of our sister schools, the Cinema School, the Annenberg School of Communications and Journalism, the Viterbi School of Engineering, to try to cultivate an experience that will really hopefully help both move the needle and showcase USC.
I know you can't tell me who won, but what's one of the exciting things you've seen today?
So far, we haven't started the venture competition yet, so I can't really disclose what our people are going to be showing off in about 1 hour. However, I will say this. Out of 100 submissions, the final five are really strong, and I'm not so sure which way this thing is going to go. We'll be announcing the winners at 4:30, and I'm pretty sure that it'll be a mystery until then.
Are you maybe going to be looking at someone who's finding a cure for cancer versus someone who invented a new dog bed?
Okay. My personal favorite in terms of the concept is a gentleman who started a venture called Click On Comics, which is a new interface for essentially being able to download digital comics and buy them and sell them and so forth. But there were dozens and dozens of outstanding concepts, and you're going to find all of those presentations are super strong, they're super interesting, and they're all pretty different from each other.
So we're going live at 4. I guess you'll be just about to name the winner. Where can people look to find the winner?
They can come on down, actually, to hear the final announcement at 4:30 if they'd like in the main ballroom at the Tudor Campus Center. They can wait until we post the announcement on the website, and there are a few websites. One is siliconbeachusc.com, but they can just as easily go to the USC Marshall website where we'll ultimately post that information. And they can check the Twitter hashtag, SiliconBeachUSC, because we'll probably tweet that information out probably within minutes of the announcement.
That was Jay Tucker, founder of Silicon Beach at USC. We're a few months into this fall season of TV, and one of the biggest freshman hits is ABC's Black-ish. Maya Williams shares her thoughts on the new sitcom.
The new comedy series Black-ish is only 5 episodes into its first season, and already USA Today predicts it has the potential to change the TV landscape. The anything but traditional sitcom features a successful Black family in suburban LA. It stars household names Tracy Ellis Ross, Anthony Anderson, and Lawrence Fishburne, along with a quartet of talented and fresh-faced child actors to round out the Johnson family. Their weekly capers present and subvert stereotypes of what it means to be Black in a post-racial society.
Obama's the first Black president. I mean, does that make him any less president? No.
No, because he's the first Black president of the United States. Not the first Black president of the urban United States.
Obama's the first Black president?
Each week introduces provocative social commentary tackling issues like giving the sex talk, gender roles in parenting, and spanking. The conflict across each episode is Anderson's attempt to force his post-racial family to retain the identity of Blackness, whatever that means. The comedy is in his methods.
Hold on a second, let's explore this. Jack, did you really not know that Obama was the first Black president?
He's the only president I've ever known.
only. Did you hear that? Only. So that explains his complete lack of presidential trivia.
Lawrence Fishburne stars as the grandfather who lives in the guest house. His old school mentality and dry witticisms serve as a foil to the precocious, evolved children.
All right. Yeah, woo.
Hey, you too. You knew that Obama was the first black president, right?
I guess.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. See what I'm talking about? Big chicken.
Melding together three generations under one roof offers a refreshing perspective on the black experience, while showcasing at the same time a modern American family. Comedy here works like a spoonful of sugar and proves that sometimes conversations about race don't have to be so serious. Blackish airs on Wednesday nights on ABC. Maya Williams, Annenberg Radio News.
Oktoberfest is an important part of Bavarian culture making its way to the South Bay. Local patrons can enjoy traditional German cuisine and beer, of course, but the highlight of the festivity is the authentic German folk band and their spirited music. Mary Grace Montemayor reports from Torrance.
We are live here at the Alpine Village.
Die schönste Platz ist an der Theke, which means the best place is at the bar. This particular band, everyone lives within a certain radius of Uettingen. They're really good musicians and they're very true to the German tradition. It's been going on in their family and in the city for several generations.
And they just really get the whole crowd moving. It's amazing just to see all these people from everywhere participating in this German festival, not knowing what they're exactly saying or what it means, you know? So it's really cool.
A traditional song might be like a 3-4, which is we would know it as a waltz, and that's something they can chunkle with, which is means they get on the bench and they lock arms and they go back and forth and back and forth. The Hope Brewhouse is probably the oldest, most famous beer garden in the world. This is a song about that. They talk about, you know, the Isar flows, and this is my beautiful, my favorite, my home. And then they go on, they talk about, like, water is clean and good for you, but it only dilutes the blood. We'd rather drink wine and beer because it's more fun. When you get together, it's time to just let go. When they sing Ein Prosit der Gemütlichkeit, it means togetherness, like to comfort, to that warm feeling you get when you're around friends and family. There's an old traditional song called Trink, Trink, Bruderlein, Trink. Drink, drink, brother, drink. And leave your problems at your house and just go out and drink and have fun. If you know the people, they work really hard and they party about as hard as anyone I've ever seen. When in Rome, do, you know, like the Romans, and when in Germany, you would do like they do.
Now we check in with Maddie Mills to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Maddie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure.
So what we're going to be talking about tonight is actually one group of USC students from the Women's Student Assembly, and all of them participated in a national event today where a bunch of college campuses decided to carry mattresses around to all of their classes to kind of take a stand against sexual assault. So that was really interesting, and the mattresses weighed between 50 and 100 pounds, and there were four tiny girls carrying these mattresses around, so they definitely took the heat for a lot of that, and it was really great to kind of see them all uniting and for such a great cause.
Oh, wow, very interesting. Okay, we'll catch you at 6 p.m.
Thank you so
much. Thanks, Maddie. Yep, it's National Cat Day, everyone. A day that asks cat lovers not to buy their cats from pet stores, but to adopt them and rescue the graceful creatures from shelters. So to promote the day, Uber is offering kittens on demand for 15 minutes at a time. The kitty special costs $30 and is available in several cities throughout the U.S. Unfortunately, L.A.'s not one of them. That's it for this Wednesday for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News. I'm Carrie Poppy.